Hi there, everybody. Welcome to The Principal Entrepreneur. I'm your host and author of the book, How to Be a Great Principal, Jonathan Royce. This is episode 99 of The Principal Entrepreneur, where we support educational leaders with strategies and suggestions that answer the question, how do I become a great principal? In today's episode, we're talking with Dr. Tommy Watson. Dr. Watson is a former elementary principal, acclaimed author, and speaker. He is also the owner and driving force behind his company, T.A. Watson Speaking, Coaching, and Consulting. We'll discuss his book, A Face of Courage, and his area of expertise, which is the systematic motivation of students, in just a few minutes. But before we do, we'll get into his educational journey. Dr. Watson, welcome to the show.
Jonathan, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
We're part of the same Facebook group, and I saw that a flyer that you had posted on Facebook that talked about the systematic motivation of students, and I found that really intriguing, so I reached out to you. But before we even touch on that, talk to me about what brought you into education. You weren't born with an educational silver spoon in your mouth, so to speak. Your parents weren't necessarily invested in education. Tell us about your educational journey and kind of what inspired you to become an educator.
Absolutely, Jonathan. You know, it was definitely a bumpy road. I grew up in Denver, Colorado, to parents who were drug addicts and shoplifters. And as a result of their behaviors, my siblings and I, we paid a heck of a price. You know, spending a lot of time in foster homes and crisis centers and motel rooms. In fact, I went to, I think, five different elementary schools. By the time I was in sixth grade, three of those came within 1 year from second to third grade. So as you can imagine, a lot of gaps in my learning during that time. Spent my entire eighth grade year school in a motel room after getting kicked out of our house in front of all of our friends. Again, education was definitely lapsing in that period of time as well. But I ran into a coach in eighth grade who inspired me and my inner city teammates to step up to the plate and get our academics up to attend a private suburban Denver high school in ninth grade, and that really inspired me. I looked at that as my possible opportunity out of the situation I was growing up in, and really hit the books and got a chance to go out to this private suburban Denver high school, school that my parents were initially against, and but lo and behold, ended up going back to prison again by the time I was in ninth grade, and I ended up moving my grandmother and taking three city buses one way to high school every day, starting at 6:30 in the morning. Me and my comrades in the inner city. So, growing up in predominantly white high school was tough because many of the kids were not accustomed to being around African American kids. Many of the kids were very affluent out there, and then we were getting criticized for going to a white school in our neighborhood. So, definitely had to live between two worlds. But ended up getting a scholarship to go play football for the University of Minnesota, and I did that, and ended up getting an injury. But shortly after college, I really discovered the power of education and how much of a difference it had made in my journey, bringing me up out of poverty and homelessness. And I want to do the same thing to inspire our young people to maximize education, utilize it, and then give back in the same way. So I'm a firm believer that education is a game changer for not only for myself, but for many of our young people growing up today. So I got out of school, jumped in education, and been in the field ever since. Again, education is definitely a game changer to everyone involved, and I commend all those educators out there who are grinding every day, inspiring young people to take advantage of it.
So take me back to that first eighth grade coach who introduced you one to football, and then how did that translate for you to education? How did those two marry?
Absolutely, you know, I was playing basketball in inner cities. And the coaches came out from the suburbs recruiting players to come out to the high school. And I remember out of 13 guys on the team, I got really, really excited, but also knew that out of the 13, I was probably the one who probably wasn't going to get the parental support to go out to the school. Ultimately, I was the only kid who ended up going out to the me and two other guys were the only guys who ended up going out to the school for my team. The other two didn't last, unfortunately left out after their first year. I had a coach for the first time who really believed in me, who pushed me, who motivated me, who constantly spoke life into me and talked to me about the possibilities beyond my neighborhood. And it was interesting, as grueling as it was, taking three city buses one way from inner city to the suburbs. I remember often days seeing the transformation that was taking place between the neighborhoods as we left my neighborhood and going out to the suburbs and saying, wow, you know what? someday I want to experience and live in a home very similar to the homes that I'm seeing around my school and that my teammates and others were living in. So it really, really just pressed me to really grind it out, but also was heavily focused on going to the pros. And no one killed my dream about going to the pros. No one told me to have a plan B. No one told me that my chances of making it was slim. They simply had a philosophy that life would teach Tommy what's going to happen. So I simply pursued my goal of going to the NFL. Got hurt my third year of college, but that was a good place to be, you know, to pursue, continue my education after getting hurt. But oftentimes, I think as educators, we kill the dreams of our young people by telling them that their chance to make it to the NFL or slim or what have you, not realizing that there's never, ever, ever been an NFL player to go to the NFL who hasn't gone to college first. So right. You got to go to college first.
Right.
And they simply tied that into the college journey for me and made it very easy for me.
Was there a particular teacher outside of your coach who kind of sparked that, you know, I can, because you talked about the gaps that you had in your education. How did you close those gaps? Or was there a teacher that kind of helped you out there?
Absolutely. There was a teacher by the name of Sister Brennan that each and every one of us who came from the inner cities, we were assigned to her as a homeroom teacher for all 4 years I was there. And Sister Brennan was a nun, but she was tough-nosed. She was a hard-nosed nun. Amazing teacher, had high expectations for us, but also cared a great deal for us. So she was constantly pushing us, giving us the instruction at the level we needed, but also was pulling us up to another place every day. So we had her for 2 hours every day for 4 years. By the time we left Mullen High School, we were at the same academic level as the other kids. So she was a beautiful soul. Got a chance recently to go back to Mullen High School. Was planning on going back to speak at her retirement last year. She was scheduled to retire on June 14th. However, she passed away on May 11th last year at the age of 92 years old. So she actually never retired. But she was one of the most impactful educators, most essential educators I ever came across, because her expectations were always high, but she also exhibited high care in everything she did. Because oftentimes, as educators, we say we have high expectations for kids, but oftentimes that entails either just solely high demanding that the kids do certain things, but there's no care or love with it, or just giving them high care and love, but there's no demanding of the excellence and results. So high expectations is usually a combination of those two, and those are the two things that Sister Brennan exhibited very well in her job as an educator.
Right. So she went out.
I say calling, more calling than job. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like she went out on top.
Absolutely. Amazing teacher.
So you got your shot at, you went to you said Minnesota to play ball.
Yes.
Did you get into? Yes, go blue. did you go into education in college, or was that after you had hurt your back that you decided to become an educator?
After college, but I was always working with kids. I was one of the guys on the team who was constantly going out to school, speaking as an athlete, constantly, you know, just trying to give back. And just really recognized that was going to be the vehicle to inspire our young people to get off certain elements of poverty and issues later on in life. So, you know, just continue that journey after college and stay involved with youth, and been on that track pretty much ever since.
So did you become a teacher, or did you go right from college to the principalship?
I actually worked with McDonald's Corporation for several years in their leadership program, and at the time I was in Minnesota, they recognized outside leadership, which helped in to segue me into becoming a behavior teacher, and then eventually into an administration.
Okay. So,
yes.
So you became an elementary principal. What was your most challenging experience as a principal?
Wow, you know, my first year as a principal, I walked into a high-poverty school, a school where the morale was very low for the staff, a very veteran staff. Parents were kind of doing whatever they wanted to, cursing out staff members in the building. So it was a building very much in chaos. And I came in there and really set the tone that we were a different school. And even though we were high-poverty school, we were a first-class school, and we were first-class staff for serving first-class students. So really after that first year of school, I mean, the morale increased tremendously. The student body was pumped up. The parents were excited to have their kids come to the school. In fact, there were a lot of parents in the district who were transferring their kids to Palmer Lake Elementary School because they were so excited about what we were doing at the school. Very, very successful year. And then at the end of the year, the district needed to cut $14 million. And I was the low principal on the totem pole,
right,
which meant that I was out.
Right.
And along with a third of my staff who I brought in were losing their jobs as well. So it was very, very difficult to keep morale going. And in fact, I had to welcome in the new principal who was taking my position as I was on the way out the door as well. And at the 11th hour, all my staff rallied with the parents and the community and went before the school board and superintendent and demanded that I was going to remain their principal. And I was very, very appreciative of that, and I appreciate the leadership for recognizing that, and we worked out an agreement for me to stay there in the building. However, that second year, a third of his staff, this previous principal who was coming in, his staff, were also assigned to the building. They were not happy about that.
Right.
So I had to go back to do a lot of things I did in the first year with a third of my staff being new and make sure they were being welcomed and feeling appreciative as well. But that was very, very tough, having those dynamics and losing a third of my staff and also having to welcome a staff that was intending or expecting their principal to be leading them going forward. And then at the last minute, I was the principal who came back in the picture. So it was very, very tough.
So you're telling me that it was tough, and it sounds like you were also successful in making that. What were the steps in between the beginning of that challenge and then successfully onboarding that new staff for both that first year, and then it sounds like the second year you kind of had to, it was almost like you had two first years in a row.
Absolutely, yeah. And it was tough recognizing that. But, you know, one of the big lessons I learned during this time was that change was tough, but change was also necessary for growth. And one of the things I continue to do is always speaking life into my staff. I constantly told my staff they were a first-class staff, serving first-class students, and we were a first-class school. So I was constantly doing that. Really was very, very consistent in getting us to move away from being punitive to being a more discipline-focused school. So, you know, it wasn't about hammering kids, but it was about teaching kids how to exhibit the behavior that we wanted them to exhibit, and not necessarily just jumping on their case every time that they did something that wasn't meeting our expectations.
Right.
Heavy emphasis on instructional strategies, and also classroom management. I often told my teachers that they were the front line in getting our students to stay engaged and learn the things they need to learn in the classroom. So as long as they were learning in the classroom, it minimized the behavior problems and reduced a lot of the resources that we had to put towards kids in other portions of the building as well.
Right.
We got the community involved. We got community coming in and volunteers. We tapped in local churches. You know, we had a high-poverty school, so our parents were not able to get in the building a lot, but we had tapped in to a number of schools, the city, staff workers. So if you ever came to my building, you had adults everywhere in the building, but they weren't necessarily parents. So it was really changing the mindset about parental involvement and just saying, hey, we just need caring adults in this building involved, supporting our kids.
Right.
And then we also engaged in PLCs, professional learning communities, to make sure we had a common language. We were engaged in common behavior practices for our students. It also gave us a chance to have common assessments, which was very, very important. And then in terms of our student body, we made sure that all of our students in the building were engaged in mentoring and also community service as part of that discipline aspect of it as well.
Right.
And I tried to be very, very confident in my expectations of excellence to my parents. You know, everything we did was about we were a family, we were moving forward together. The parents had to model it first, and we did that every day. And then the last thing we did, we really stopped at the end of the day, the last 30 minutes of the day, because there's a lot of issues around homework. A lot of kids were not getting homework done. So we had decided as a staff, was it really about kids actually going home and doing the work or just exhibiting that they can do the work independently? So one of the things we decided was we wanted to make sure that kids knew how to do the work independently with the support that we can provide them with as much as we could as a staff. So at the end of the day, last 30 minutes of the day, every day, all hands on deck went into the classroom, and we supported educators in supporting our students through interventions and enrichment activities.
Right.
The only person who was not involved in it was the building engineer and the school secretary. Everyone went into the classroom, and we supported our kids and made sure that everyone was connecting and doing what they had to do around learning. And lastly, a heavy emphasis on reading. So those aspects really helped us gain a lot of notoriety and and respect in the district, and really helped us elevate ourselves as one of the top schools in the district before leaving.
Right, right. This
and one suspension in the building as well.
That speaks volume to kind of what you're talking about. I heard you talk a lot about being consistent, being positive, creating a building where self-discipline is the norm. And as I think about that, it makes me think about your book, A Face of Courage. It sounds like there was some lessons in your life that not only you brought with you to your leadership, but also, I'm assuming, this book, A Face of Courage. Tell us about the inspiration for that book.
Absolutely, John. You know, and initially it was done to really provide me as a an outlet to get my feelings and expressions out based upon what I experienced as a kid. So it was kind of therapeutic in many ways. But I found on the journey that it became a book that became very, very inspiring for a lot of people. So I began to use it with educators to give many of our educators an insight look in terms of what many of our kids in poverty are facing on a day-to-day basis. In fact, as I go around the country speaking oftentimes in the workshops, I do an activity that's called I Am Tommy Watson. And during that activity, the educators in the room have to actually read a portion of my book and actually become me for a short period of time. And it's absolutely amazing. Every time I do it, the number of educators who break down in tears and gain new perspectives in terms of just being able to walk in my footsteps as Tommy Watson and seeing those same Tommy Watsons in their classroom every day, and how they go back with a new motivation, new insights, new strategies on how to deal with those kids and not be so punitive and negative towards those kids because of the challenges that many of those kids are facing. They can't necessarily, they didn't choose to be in those situations. So it gives the educators a chance to really, really get an inside look and see in terms of what it's like to go to bed without your parents there, end up in foster homes, visiting your parents in the prison, seeing your brothers and sisters in and out of gangs and drugs and what have you on the streets, and really processing as a kid how you become so angry at the world because so many things are out of your control.
Right.
So I often tell educators many times that, you know, when you walk in those footsteps as Tommy Watson, my life, I had no control of my life. So one of the things I did, I came to school and tried to control that environment, you know, and oftentimes the kids who need love most are the kids who ask for it in the most undesirable ways.
Right,
so I wanted
right.
a lot of love, but I asked for it in a very undesirable way in terms of cursing out teachers and anything I could do to get attention, negative attention, I did. So letting teachers know that, you know, those kids who are doing those things oftentimes, they're not doing it because they're really hell-bent on making your day bad. That's the way they're releasing their frustrations. And once we gather that sense of perspective around the kids, we're able to proceed forward with different interventions and strategies to engage them in the school building, allowing them to feel pushed, but also allowing them to feel loved as well.
Right. It sounds like it's not only a good book for educators, but it seems like it would be a good book for students as well. Often,
absolutely.
I taught English, and I was always looking for, you know, high interest books from people that look like me. And this sounds like it would be a good book for our boys too.
Absolutely. In fact, a lot of schools around the nation have already adopted A Face of Courage and have it as reading material. In fact, my master's thesis was on how stories such as that could engage kids. And it was highly engaging. It's been highly engaging. So I would definitely encourage those educators who are looking for some materials to engage kids to check it out and utilize it with their kids.
Yeah. So you wrote your book. You were a principal And eventually you left to start your educational consulting business so you can have an even greater impact on schools across the nation. Tell us about your systematic way of motivating students, and this was what originally caught my eye. How did you come to create this system?
Absolutely. You know, as I thought back to what my teachers and coaches did to keep me motivated, they did some very specific things to keep me motivated during some very, very challenging times in my life. When I got involved in my master's program, I spent years upon years upon years, master's and graduate school, my advanced graduate degree, and then my doctoral degree, studying nothing but motivation and strategies around that, and really discovered that there really is a system for motivating others, whether it be in education or industry or sports or what have you. There's a certain system that the best of the best use to keep people motivated. So I actually created my own system called Secrets to Motivating Students, geared towards educators to provide them with those same strategies. And this had a deep and profound impact on many educators around the country. In fact, there was one educator recently who came to me after one of my workshops and talked about how initially she was contemplating leaving the profession. She said she was burned out and didn't really think that it was really worth it for her to stay in there. But really, after going through the workshop, she discovered that she indeed was making an impact and she wanted to stay there, and that she was committed to those kids and she wasn't going anywhere. So it was very, very powerful seeing this educator grab hold of those strategies and use them on a day-to-day basis, not just to keep the kids motivated, but also to keep herself motivated as well, because my workshops definitely focus on the kids, but I also want to make sure that the educators first are peak performers before they go into those classrooms. But as you're going in those classrooms with the kids, that you know how to keep yourself motivated as well, because it gets very, very challenging constantly giving, and not knowing how to replenish your own self as well. So Secrets to Motivating Students is a course, workshop, training that I conduct across the nation, you know, teaching those educators how to motivate their students, but mainly how to stay motivated as you do that as well. So we're going to be doing a workshop here, a big one coming up here in North Carolina here on September 28th for Eastern Carolina, and we're going to go on a tour around the country sharing these strategies with various districts as well, because the demand is very, very high, so this gives me a chance to kind of host my own workshops and increase the numbers of individuals who can come out and get those same strategies, and we give them a turnkey program that they can actually leave and go back to the school with and conduct with the rest of their staff and also their students as well. So very, very successful program. Very, very excited to be administering this out to the country.
If you're comfortable, what are one or two steps in that system?
Well, the big step is, I call it finding the hook. And what the hook is, realizing that every single kid who comes to a building every day has a reason that they've gotten up out of their bed. And we may not necessarily value that reason the same way they value that reason, but we have to acknowledge and recognize that there's a reason that those kids are coming to school every day. In some situations, it may be a matter of kids are getting up out of bed because they're siblings. You know, in my situation, I was getting up out of bed because I wanted to go play sports. So had I had an educator in my life who told me that I needed to focus on going to college when I had never known anyone in my family to ever go to college, they were going to be wasting their time. But when the educators in my life came along and said, "Hey, Tommy, I'm glad you want to go to the NFL, but just be aware, on your journey to go to the NFL, you have to go to college first."
Right, right.
So they never stopped my journey of going to the NFL, but they just simply implemented the academics with it as they went along. So if you have kids who are into engineering or even leadership, because a lot of kids who we see in our buildings, who have strong personalities and they try to do a lot of controlling things in the classroom, they are strong leaders.
Right.
They're strong leaders. So giving that young person an opportunity to learn about different leadership skills in a positive way can be very, very helpful in hooking them into academics. So the hook is all about hooking them in to the academics as we're going along and not necessarily killing their dream. So again, we as educators, we have to move away from telling kids to have plan Bs and everything else when it comes to sports. Whatever the kid is interested in, let's celebrate that.
Right.
Let's get excited about that. And let's begin to tie that into academic performance daily. So that's the foundational piece of all aspects of motivation, which we call value or balance. So everyone has something that is important to them. everyone has something that they value. Everyone does. So we as educators, we have to dig deep, and we have to suspend judgment. That's another piece. We have to suspend judgment and allow the young person to simply do what it is that they enjoy doing. Even if you don't enjoy it, allow the young person a chance to enjoy it. If a kid says they want to be a mechanic, that is great. Let's praise that kid to be the best mechanic they can possibly be. If they want to go play sports, let's praise them to be the best athlete they can possibly be. Now, I'm not saying we can't expose them to other things on the journey, which we should be doing, but I'm simply saying let's don't crush their dream up front and try to expose them to things that we like that they may not necessarily be interested in. So let's take them on a journey by starting with where they are, what they like doing, what they're interested in, what their dreams and goals may be. Even if they may be they seem small and minute, let's start there and begin to expose them on a journey and a path heading towards the goal or dream that they want, but also expose them to other avenues on the journey as well.
So you spent a lot of years studying motivation, codifying it basically, and putting it together to serve school districts around the country. And I'm assuming eventually outside of the United States. In all this, you know, in all your research and your time as a principal, what advice would you give to yourself if you were going to be a new principal again? Can it be either from your own experiences visiting or you know, from what you actually did learn in your first few years as a principal? What advice would you give to a new principal?
Absolutely. You know, as a new principal coming in, as a principal period, the workload is absolutely crazy. It's incredible the amount of things we're called to do as a principal. I would encourage any principal, whether it be a seasoned principal or a principal coming in new, to focus on the main thing. And the main thing is about building relationships. So build relationships with the staff, build relationships with your students, build relationships with the family, build relationships with the community. And then also be the model of the change that you want to see. So a couple things I did when I was a principal, I was usually the first person in the building each morning. I was there setting the tone in terms of what I wanted to see. But on the flip side of it, my staff also knew that I valued family. So I wasn't going to stay too much longer after the work day ended.
Right.
Unless there was a meeting. So my staff really appreciated and respected that about me, because I also respected their time as a family, their time with their family as well, though. I also went to anniversaries in the community for parents. I went to birthday parties. I spent a lot of time shopping in the hood, so my kids and families were getting a chance to see me. Whenever I could stop and grab gas in the hood, it was always great to see the kids run up to me and the families run up to me and seeing me outside of the work environment. And I was able to go back to school and share those same conversations that or experiences with the rest of the staff, letting them know that the kids are different outside of the school building, that parents are doing things with kids outside of the school building. Even though they may not necessarily show up here like we want to show them, see them every day, that people are still engaged.
Right.
So as new principals, you have to be able to model the change that you want to see. You can't just go in and just tell people to do all these different things you're expecting them to do. You have to model it first. And as staff begin to see you do it, they become more invested in it. So my staff, even having me in the community, opened up the door for them to do more home visits. They became more increasingly open to doing home visits. You know, I mean, there are times we had to go climb through living room doors, screen doors, or what have you, though. And I remember some staff members giving me the look like, okay, but they're like, okay, we're on in this together.
Right.
I'm trusting you, Mr. Watson, so we're in this together. So we have to be willing to be the change that we want to see. And don't forget about the relationships, because the job can be very consuming with all the other stuff that go along with it. And you can find yourself at the desk all day long with your door closed, doing a bunch of paperwork, and forget about the people, the real aspects of the job.
Right. Speaking of modeling, the last couple questions here. What two books have had an impact on you professionally or on your professional philosophy?
Wow. You know, I coming out of McDonald's Corporation, a lot of their work was all around being a servant leader. In fact, when I went into McDonald's as a manager, I had to learn every aspect of the business before I could actually lead the staff. I had to go clean toilets. I had to mop floors, sweep floors, stuff fries, flip hamburgers before I was even able to ask anyone to do anything. I had to do that first. So John Maxwell's book, The Servant Leadership, was a huge book that every leader in that organization had to read. And then when I got into the school system, I used a lot of John Cotter's work with this book called Leading Change. And that book was very, very instrumental in helping me guide the change I was leading as we were enduring so much change in my building. I had to make sure that we had a constant vision that was before us. Everyone was buying into it. Everyone's voice was being heard. I had to make sure that I was creating those moments constantly for those small wins, acknowledging those and taking part in celebrations on a regular basis. And we were really, my staff didn't know it at the time, but I was really, really deeply engaged in following those steps to help us endure the change that we were enduring
right,
at the time.
Right. So last question, if other principals and school districts around the country want to get a hold of you, want to get in touch with you and your company, how can they reach you?
Absolutely. You can start by going to my website at www.tawatson.com or email me at tawatson@tawatson.com. Oftentimes I'm on the road a lot, so email is the best way to track me down, but if you call my office, my secretary will definitely get a hold of me as well, though. Again, www.tawatson.com or tawatson@tawatson.com. Look forward to inspiring all those educators out there and just tell them, I just commend you on the work that you're doing and the work that our nation is doing with our educators in terms of helping our youth become the next generation of leaders.
All right, Dr. Watson, thanks so much for your time. And when your next book comes out, or if you put together a workbook here about your steps here, I'd love to chat with you again.
Hey, look forward to it, Jonathan. Appreciate you having me on.
Once again, that was Dr. Watson. A couple of things that really stood out to me was when he was talking about his time in school and said, I had no control over my life, so I came to school and tried to control that. And this gets back to some of those students that we all have that always seem to be acting out and what they may be going through. I also thought when he said, we've got to switch mindset from getting parents involved to getting caring adults involved was impactful because working in a high poverty district myself, I often hear that complaint that our parents aren't involved, and you can see it on parent-student conference night, when you get, three or four families showing up, you for sure are going to hear that complaint. And this idea of bringing in other caring adults is a good way to shift your mindset about finding people to hold students accountable. Once again, if you want to contact Dr. Watson, you can go to his website, tawatson.com. You could also shoot him an email, tawatson@tawatson.com, and contact him that way. If you found this entertaining, educational, or cause for reflection, please, our one ask is to follow the show and give a ratings and review on iTunes or Podomatic. This helps other educators find the show and helps give credibility to the work, which makes it easier to get more great educational leaders on the show like Dr. Watson. For more short articles and tips that support educational leaders, check out my blog at howtobeagreatprincipal.com and order my new book there as well, if you'd like, How to Be a Great Principal, 36 Shared Leadership Success Strategies. If you're an auditory learner, you can download my podcast, The Principal Entrepreneur, on iTunes and Podomatic. New episodes come out weekly on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And if I'm lucky enough to get somebody like Dr. Watson, those interviews come out on Saturdays. If you're interested in sharing your experience as an ed leader, please email me at jonathanroyce@theprincipalentrepreneur.com. I'm especially interested in learning more about educational systems outside the United States. So if you are listening in Kenya or Australia, shoot me an email. Again, jonathanroyce@theprincipalentrepreneur.com. I'd love to chat with you. Finally, I'm part of a community of supportive principals. Please join our private Facebook group. Type in The Principal Entrepreneur in the search page and our private group will pop up. You'll probably be asked a question, whether or not you are an educational leader. If you are in education and you are in a leadership position of any kind, you are an educational leader. That is it for this episode. Thanks so much for listening to The Principal Entrepreneur.